Jamie Hoyland's Marvellous People.
Marvellous.
On BBC Radio Lancashire.
On this week's Jamie Hoyland's Marvellous People, we've got a double hit from Down Under. We've got young Bailey Wright and his dad Andy. Thank you for taking part.
Yep, no worries. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for having us, mate.
Yeah. And there will be subtitles and also edited so we can understand this. Not for the Australian lads, for my Yorkshire accent. So we're going to start off like I do every programme, OK? I'll start with you, Bailey. What's the most marvellous thing you've ever done?
I'll go with football. Does it have to be one or can it be a few?
Oh, here we go. Come on. Australian straight away problems. As many as you want. Go on, seeing as though it's
you. I'd have to say winning at Wembley, obviously. The play a final, making my Australian debut, and getting engaged this year. On a personal note, last year, put that in. I'll get married.
He's had to come out with that, hasn't he, Andy? Really?
Oh, he's soft. He's so soft.
Happy work.
Brandy points. Brandy points.
And what about you, Andy? What's the most marvellous thing you've ever done?
Oh, there's been plenty, but that'd have to be football. I reckon going to Brazil for the World Cup last year.
Yeah,
was brilliant. Because it was so unexpected. We sat at home probably 6 days before it, going, thinking he was going to get cut from the squad, and then 6 days later we were there in Brazil. It was awesome. It was mind-numbing. And the player final this year, going to Wembley for the first time, and that was just dreams.
Yeah. Dreams. I mean, we'll take it right to the beginning. I mean, you've mentioned two things what we've got to talk about, obviously the World Cup and the playoff final, but the beginning of it, obviously Australian lad, Football wasn't that big out there. So what was the decision to come to England? Or how did it come about?
Well, it's a long story. Well, where I grew up, a lot of my mates played Aussie rules rather than football. But my local football club was just down the road. And used to always play. Dad ended up being my coach through loads and I can't remember how many seasons.
So we've got a lot for him to blame for.
Yeah.
That's why I had a lot to work on then when he came over.
A lot of those habits are from him. And then, obviously, it was either take the pathway of working with Dad or come over here for a trial. So it took a family friend, I suppose, and a few emails to get a chance over here. And that's when I met you, obviously, with the...
Yeah. Unfortunately,
on that ill-fated day, yes.
Yeah. So obviously, when you say your dad was your coach, and did you think he's not bad here? I know he's your son, like, but did you think he's got a chance?
In Australia, he was good.
Yeah.
He always was good. But I've grown up with English football my whole life, and this is where you have to come to be tested, and that's why we come over and just have a look. And when he was 13, he came over and had a look, and really, really liked it. Went back and just worked hard and.
I didn't know you'd come over at 13.
Yeah,
where was that then? Also
with
Dario Grande.
In Celtic.
Yeah, with Steve Holland, who's now the assistant at Chelsea.
Chelsea, yeah.
Had a look over Bailey and said, not what we're looking for. A bit too heavy and a bit too slow. And that's all they needed. And we went back and got motivated and worked hard.
Right, so those words about doing that, you went home and thought, right.
And get fitter. So our driveway is quite long in Australia. And every 10 minutes.
Oh, I've seen the house. You've shown us the house on Google Earth.
Yeah.
It's like Chatsworth House.
I showed you how good it used to be in the sun and everything.
Yeah.
We used to have a tree like every 10 metres. So we used to set up doggies for every tree. That tree back, the next tree back. That was my fitness sessions. And I lost loads of weight, got fitter doing that. And then, obviously, a few years later, I got selected into a few Victorian teams and stuff like that. And then sort of pathways were running out. And we come over here for a trial with, obviously.
But when you said you came over, you can't just get on a plane and think, right, well, I'm going to land here. Right, we'll pick them out. We'll just go and knock on the door, can you?
Yeah. That's basically, long story short, we came over with a team.
Yeah.
They did a tour. We played at Everton. And we got to meet Terry McPhillips.
Yes.
He was the Blackburn assistant gaffer to
Reese. Right, yeah.
Terry stayed in touch a couple of years later. I spoke to Terry regularly, probably on a yearly basis, and he said, now's the age you bring him over for a trial. And he said, if you're going to bring him this far, you should go to another club. And he suggested Preston, great setup, good youth setup, down the road. So I sent an email to, who was the scout at the time?
Jim.
Yeah.
And he replied, and that's how it worked out.
Right.
But we nearly missed your trial.
Yeah.
Because my phone didn't work. And while I stayed in Chipping, I couldn't get reception, and I missed the first 2 days. And only got to that one trial, that session you'd put on Saturday morning.
That Saturday, I mean, we were supposed to be having a match that day, yeah. And it got cancelled, and we decided to train. And then I'll remember it now. They were knock on door, and there were yourself and your dad saying we've come to train. And I've looked at Jim and who were these? And obviously then out you went and joined in.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was Tom Owens actually brought my kit to me. And I was like, didn't know what was going on. I bought my own kit with me and everything, had my own boots. I think I had a Chelsea training kit to wear or something. Had no idea what to expect. And just remember, I just went out in my Puma Kings. Jack Cudworth was in goal at the time.
Oh, you're going to score then?
Yeah.
Jack in goal.
He was my goalkeeper, so I was having him shout at me the whole time.
Right, yeah.
Did as Dizzy told me to. Crunched a few people and obviously had a nice conversation with you straight after, and the rest is history, really.
Well, you see, the thing about that is, when I used to sign players at Preston, it used to take me a bit of time, because if you went, gut reaction was, they're all right, but then I'd like to see them again, find out a little bit more, and you're the only player I've ever signed after seeing you, after 15 minutes, I knew I wanted to sign you. But there was a little bit of a problem, because you weren't going to come in three times a week training because you lived in Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. We were on a flight back, I think, a week later.
Yeah, you were. So
no,
I'd,
no, that day.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I think
that
you were, yeah.
Afternoon.
Yeah, was you it? Did, yeah.
Because we went around and visited, you weren't there because Dean Rammers was there.
Yeah.
You'd gone on out and he gave us all the paperwork for the youth contract. He took us to the digs, showed us the digs, and we drove to the airport and flew home. We got home Christmas Eve at about midnight, and it was pretty exciting coming home with the contract going, wow. Wow. It was amazing. It was one of the best feelings ever.
And how did you tie it up at your end then? How did that work?
It was pretty messy at our end. Australia would not grant any releases for players under 18.
Yeah.
They stalled and stalled and stalled. But here's a funny story. I'm at the World Cup last year in Brazil, big family function, and a mate I used to play football with comes up to me, says, hey, Andy, how are you going? I said, good. So what are you doing here? I'm dating a girl from the Australian Football Federation, but she's a bit worried about speaking to you. I said, why? She's the lady who refused him to leave for 8-9 months we were fighting with.
Wow.
So I actually met her, and she was all, sorry about all that. I was told to do it and everything. And yeah, no, it was really, it was surreal to finally catch up with her. And she said, well, I was just doing what I was told to do. It's not your problem.
I must admit, like, we kept, like, with the email, I mean, Dean did all that with the emails and finding out. And as time went on, I must admit, I thought, we're not going to get Bailey here. He's going to have to stay in Australia. And then 18's a difficult time to come over, because then you have to come over and be a pro straight away. So it was that time I thought, we're going to miss out on something here. It must have been a worrying time for you then, Bailey, as well.
Yeah, well, I just went back and started playing for my local team, obviously, to get playing, keep fit until we come over. And I'd left school before then anyway. And I was just working with Dad, so as it carried on, I was like, I wonder if this is going to be a wind-up, if we just one day just turns up, it's not going to happen. Is this going to happen? Like, I was desperate to get over there and give it a crack. But obviously, as things carried on and more things got involved, like obviously behind the scenes with releases and whatnot. But then when we first flew over here, I was just like, I hope they know I'm coming. I just remember, because all it was emails and the odd phone call, and that's all it was.
Mm. I mean, what a thing that was. You know, you've left home, you've come all the way, you know, over the world to leave Australia, to come to England, and you're in digs. Was it 18 other lads?
Yeah. The first week was a shock, but then I remember leaving, obviously, when I left the house to go to the airport to leave. Obviously, it was tears and whatnot. It was like, see you later.
Well, there'll be tears of joy, knowing your dad. There'll be tears of joy.
Yeah, but a few tears of joy, that's for sure. And I honestly thought I'd get homesick. And obviously, as soon as I come in, straight over, everyone was welcoming. Mick and Joan were really good. The lads in the house obviously give me a bit of stick at the start, but makes you stronger and makes sure you are. And in all honesty, I missed home, I missed family, but I never got homesick. And I think that's just because I loved what we were doing, and it was living the dream.
I mean, that must have been a massive, massive worry for you, him going over and missing.
In all seriousness, it was at 16, you're giving up school, giving up education to go around the world on a dream. And if it didn't pan out, you'd miss out on a big chunk of your education. And it was a worrying time. You didn't want him not to go, but you were so nervous all the time that if it didn't pan out, what was your backup? You didn't have one. So luckily, it went the other way.
Yeah,
very likely.
brightest person anyway, so
yeah.
I didn't have much education. I was really struggling, yeah. Which I don't have.
And how did you find it when you came over? Because when did you eventually come into it?
My first game was against Man City in the Youth Cup.
Was that your first game?
That was my first game. So I played for the fans team. I played in friendly
games.
Right. So
yeah, you did. That's team. Right, yeah. Steve Cowell, you finished up playing for his team to get some match fitness, match sharpness, which is an unbelievable story when you think that you've made 150 league games for Preston North End, but you've made your debut for the Preston North End fans team. I forgot about that, Bales. That's unbelievable.
I remember it to the T. I remember I was like organised and I was like, yeah, they're going to come pick you up from the digs. And so it was at the sports arena, which is where the youth team train now. Didn't then. I remember this guy giving me a call. Yeah, we're just across the road at the bank. And there's a guy in an old busted up van. Steve Cowell, I think he's still got the same van now. And I got to get the van. He goes, yeah, just jump in the back. So he slides the door open. And all it was just cartons of bottles of water and Powerade. So I'm like, yeah, just jump in the back. It's only 10 minutes down the road. So I'm sitting on these crates of water on the way down to this game in the back of his van. And they brought me in the change rooms and everyone was like, saying hello, real friendly. And obviously all Preston fans. And then the referee comes in and says, oh, we need to get a whip round to pay for the ref. And they come over to me, fiver. I was like, oh, all right. So I actually got a fiver out to pay for the referee to play in that game. And I remember it, and I didn't care because all I wanted to do was play, and obviously we played, and it was a bit different from the standard of training I was used to and playing with the boys, but it was great. It was a game and a good bit of experience and a good story at the end of the day.
I didn't even know you'd had to pay for referee as well. Yeah. That is absolute class. Oh, my. Steve Cowell took fiver off you as well, which is a disgrace.
Yeah.
Wait till I see him about that.
It was him that took the fiver off me. I think it probably was Steve. Yeah.
Did you win?
Yeah, we won. We didn't concede as well. So
oh, right, that's all right then. That's why I must have picked you then to play against Man City.
Yeah.
Jamie Hoyland's Marvellous People.
Marvellous. On BBC Radio Lancashire.
And now for some more chat with my Australian friends, Bailey and Andy Wright.
We got City in the Youth Cup and that was my first start and one to remember, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was. I mean, us to beat Man City that day was like, you know, a massive cup shock. And I remember going in the dressing room after that. The lads hadn't come in then. And there was me, Dean, I think Nick and Jim. And we just grabbed each other and started jumping up and down like Rodney and Del Boy in that Reliant Robin, just like that after we'd beat Man City. It was fantastic. And I mean, we had a good run. We had a good side. We had some good players then, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We were right at it that game.
Yeah.
I think it was backs against the wall sort of towards the end of the game, but it's always going to be expected with the player. I think they had million-pound players sitting on the bench in their youth team. Yeah. We were just all like gobsmacked. Yeah. And I remember, obviously, Neil Dugan was friends with a few of the boys and he'd been FaceTiming them that week. They were all giving it the big one on FaceTime and because they were all on better money than us in Man City. So we were grabbing, like, what were we doing? We were grabbing all that little stuff and show them on the camera and they were grabbing Louis Vuitton stuff like this, like, we don't care, we're going to beat us. So when we beat them, it felt so good. I remember the feeling afterwards. It was, still remember the song that was playing straight after that game.
Do you?
Yeah, I got a feeling.
Oh, it was,
the big speakers all just running around loving life.
Yeah, it was, yeah, fantastic. So while all this were going on then, Andy, and he's playing, making his debut for the fans team. Gosh, can you imagine now academies, that'd just not be allowed. But hey, he's got as a player through, it don't matter how they come through. That is brilliant, Bales. How were you keeping tabs with this? There weren't any FaceTime or all like that then, were there?
Skype.
Yeah, so you were...
Skype.
You doing...
Yeah, Skype was pretty horrible back then, it was very delayed.
Yeah.
But we could hear a lot of your games, P&E player called.
Right.
So I'd take it to work, the phone, and listen to it while I was down a hole, digging a hole.
Honestly.
Because it'd be, you know, morning time over there at work and morning tea and all you guys are playing late at night. And I always remember when you played Sunderland.
Yeah.
And the video footage of both you and Rammers both going for the same header on the sideline was fantastic.
Yeah.
And the Stadium of Light, you beat them too, I think.
Yeah, we beat them on penalties.
Penalties, that's right, yeah. No, it was good.
Yeah.
And it's, that's the hard part, keeping in touch with it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I left home at 16, but I just went to Manchester over at Snake Pass, and I could get home at weekend. And it was always a worry for us, I mean, because we had the Irish lads as well, yeah. You know, which was over the water for them to get home. Mm. And then we had obviously got an Australian, well, and Cameron as well, to get Cameron Parrish, who came as well, to think, well, how we'd... You know, because a lot of the lads went home at weekends, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that was a tough time, I think, sometime for the lads who were in the digs.
Yeah, I think obviously all the boys, all the English boys would tend to go home. Cam was my roomie throughout the time there.
Yeah.
His family were over as well, so some weekends he'd stay in the digs, sometimes he'd go home. And then obviously it was the Irish lads who were a mixed bag of personalities and good fun.
Yes.
Once I got to understand them, and didn't realise that there was so many different Irish accents.
I'm glad you did, because I still struggle sometimes.
Michael,
yes.
Went over the top of my head, but we used to have the bond you make and you just get closer and closer, and sometimes it'd do your head and you just wanted to get home and things like that, but we're all in the same situation, so we always looked out for each other. I look back at it now and some of the stories and things and stuff we used to get up to and what we were doing was probably the best years of my life still now, and I think it carves who you are.
Yeah, it certainly does. I remember my digs. I mean, my room partner with Paul Simpson, who I'm still best friends with now, he was 15 when he came to Man City. I was 16 because his birthday was in August, and it was that what makes you, that initial bit when you come together and you get a group of lads, it's how you grow up. Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons I signed you as well, because I saw a lot of you, what I was, and I just thought, he's mature now. And I were mature at 17. I used to be, you know, playing in Man City's reserves or whatever, and I saw a lot of you. So I think going into the digs, you were always going to be that. Suddenly you became a leader anyhow within that, and took, when I said took over the place, it self-policed itself with the apprentices, because we'd say, Bailey, sort that out. And you'd sort it out. I think you got a bit of your dad in you there.
I think work on the job site, obviously getting bossed about a bit, you soon learn to boss others about, and think it's just standards. If you set standards and demand them off others, soon it spreads, and that's all it was. I think we had a good bunch of boys that were willing to work hard, and we all, I mean, you have your blips, you have your times, you play up, but I think that's part of learning, isn't it?
So, yeah.
We had a good bunch of boys that were willing to get better and improve and all wanted to do well for each other. And I think if we look at those sort of 2 to 3 years of how successful, I think we won nearly every trophy that there was to win for us, bar the FA Youth, the Youth Cup. But we went on an unbelievable run to get how far we did. So when you still look now, there's still quite a few boys still playing and some that may be unlucky not to still be playing.
Yeah, definitely. And then obviously, it's a horrible thing being an apprentice because you all want the one goal. Whatever, and you can win as many cups as you want, you can score as many goals, you can keep clean sheets, there's only one goal you want. And I always used to say to apprentices, there's only one person who can get that for you, and that's yourself, and that was the pro contract. And I must have been a dad far away, that's like you were, Andy, thinking, I hope he can get that with everything he gambled on.
Well, that was it. It's hard to put into words. It was it all hinged on that.
Yeah.
And you keep thinking, just hope you are good enough. And like going through that time, we had to wait to get clearance. I was in the same vein as you. I thought, he's going to miss the boat here. They're going to stuff him around until they won't release him. But then it all went really good.
Remember when I did the first Christmas, obviously the club allowed me to go home, we had the break. And that was the last Christmas I got back in Australia. But I always remember whenever I bumped into certain family and a lot of friends, they say, when are you moving back? And my answer was always like, hopefully never. Some of them used to look at me like, no, sure, it's like a couple of years. And even still, for a few years after, I used to go back every summer. The off-season. And friends would used to say, when are you moving back? And I'm like, hopefully never. And sort of at the time, when I give the answer, I used to think, I hope it's never. Like, I hope I can, but you're never really sure. You're like, I've got 2 years here. Who knows what's next? You don't really look that into it. You just give the best you've got for those 2 years. And then when the next contract comes along, you do the same. And I always wanted to stay here for as long as possible. And some people maybe always just expect me to go back, but I never did, and hopefully I won't.
No, you've always had that driven goal of what you wanted to do, and you had that as soon as you came into the club. Obviously then, your first team debut, and that first initial thing when you see your name on that team sheet and you're travelling, I mean, what a feeling that is.
Yeah, well, I remember the first time I travelled. Coventry away, it was. One of the last games of the season, sort of. Was it? It was. It was the last game of the season, I think, when I was a first year.
Mm.
And just to be part of that, I was gobsmacked to be on the bench. And I'm sure I get goosebumps when I think about being involved in that. And then when you get your, when I had my chance of my debut against Stockport.
That's right, yeah.
I remember, I think it was Unzi who actually told me I'd be starting. We had a porter cab and then with a bit of video, and I was keen to watch a bit of video on who I was playing and want any information I could to make sure it went well. And fortunately enough, it was a good debut and one to remember. We won 5-0. I think Doyle Middleton made his debut as well.
He did, yes, he did. Yeah, he was a year younger. Yeah.
It wasn't like a mission accomplished. It was like this is the start of of where I need to get to.
And how were you with that, Andy? Did you manage to cover that game or...?
No, we couldn't. There was no P&E player for that. Oh. All we can get is the printout report. And
right.
Yeah, no, it was pretty exciting. It was an exciting day.
Some must have been so proud then, you know, that he was making his debut.
Well, the day he made his debut, I bought my new car. And so I got personalised plates with his number on.
Right.
So I've still got P&E 42 as my number plate. Right. Yeah, so, that was the same day, exact same day.
Right.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool how it all coincided all those years ago.
And now for some more chat from Down Under with Bailey and Andy Wright.
A few months after I made my debut, I played another couple of games before I had actually signed my pro contract. So I still had a lot to earn and a lot to play for.
And then suddenly something happened, didn't it? You know, you're suddenly out of the club, playing your games, and you get international call-up. I'm going to ask your dad with that one. How proud must you have been then?
It's funny. We had we knew he was not in the final squad, but we knew he'd been ranked in the top 50 in Australia.
Right.
It came out. We went, oh, gee, we're pretty happy with that. But we also received paperwork from Australian FA saying, if your son is selected for the World Cup, will you be coming? So we want to book accommodation. We're going... Oh, yeah, throw that in the bin.
Do they know how many rights there are?
Yeah.
Just have a look in this house. There's 11 living in this house now.
So we had all this going on, and the wife's going, oh, no, we should know how many are going. I'm going, oh, you're dreaming. And then he rings us one day after training and going, I've just been told I'm going to be in the squad of 30 coming back to Sydney. And we had to keep it under a hat for about 2 weeks in Australia.
Yeah.
Then it was huge.
I thought, oh, I'm not making the 30 here then. All of a sudden, I made the 30. I was like, because I'd never been called up before. Yeah. I thought it was just to be looked at.
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't bad. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to make the 23. So then the 30...
It was 27 they announced. 27,
cut it down to 27. I didn't think I'd make the 27. So I was sort of like, whoa, got a real chance here. And then I sort of looked at players around me and boys up there. And I thought, oh, there's a bit of experience here. We flew to Brazil. And I remember the day before the squad.
So they took 27 to Brazil as well. So four of them lads were going to miss out anyhow.
We were actually the first team in Brazil, except for Brazil.
Right.
To acclimatise, get used to it all.
Yeah.
Adjust, have plenty of time to get
into things. Whoa. Australians get acclimatised to Brazil. It's sunny, there's a beach.
Yeah.
End of story.
Jet lag. So we were actually in Brazil, I think, about... All in all, from the start of the camp to the end of the camp, it was nearly 2 months of being in camp with the team. But, yeah, we got to Brazil, and then the day before the 23-man sort of squad was announced, we found out which players were missing out, and I managed to be in the 23, and I just couldn't believe it. I said to Mum and Dad, I think it was the day before, I said, nah, there's no chance I'm in the 23. I wasn't feeling it. I was, like, almost telling you to book flights home, really, wasn't I?
We were sitting at home in Australia, sending him text messages to his room, trying to pep him up, saying, yeah, all right, mate. And we had everything prepared for him being home in 4 days to do a big family thing,
yeah,
to go out, and it all changed that night, just like that.
Yeah, and I was just...
So who told you that you were in the squad then? How did that come about?
It wasn't actually, the 23? It was actually, we were all in our hotel, and the night before it was officially announced, sort of said as a group, which lads were the ones missing out, and that was it. It said to the boys, sorry... I think he'd spoke to them individually, the ones that weren't in the 23, and then announced as a team and said, these are the selected 23. Let's go and prove a lot of people wrong and show that we're a good side and these are all here and you deserve to be here. And I just remember waiting like that. Just wanted to get to my room and get my phone. There was no phones in meetings and your phone was sitting in your pocket. Like, just got to get this out here. And then as soon as I did, straight away, I just couldn't believe it. I honestly thought I'd be sort of, that was it.
And what a phone call that must have been.
Oh, But more so was when he made the squad of 30, like your Sky Sports, the Australian version, came over, he did a big story on him, and he told us about it. Then they released it in Australia, because no one knew who he was. I got phone calls at work. My phone was flat by lunchtime from reporters all around the country, media. It was insane. Because they want to know who he is. Well, they're all about him. Where's he from? They're putting photos in the papers everywhere, and it was huge.
Brilliant. And how was it, the World Cup?
Unbelievable. You can't, there's so many ways you can describe it.
Well, that's, I mean, like I said, it's no use to say, oh, what were hotel like? What were training pitches like? Just the whole experience.
It's the atmosphere. You can't explain the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Playing Chile in the first game of the World Cup, it was just, it was amazing.
You walked in the stadium, and the stadium was full before before we got there. So you're in the changing rooms, and all you can hear is just Chile fans and Aussie fans. Go to the warm-up, and I couldn't even have talked. We wouldn't be able to hear each other from this far away. I was just like, this is unbelievable.
Wow.
But the thing that shocked me most, actually, was the night before was opening game, wherever Brazil played. And we were in a hotel in wherever our first game was, Curitiba, I think. And so we're going to a hotel. The streets are packed, Brazil flags. Everyone's got Brazil tops on. Escort to the hotel, get in the hotel. We have our meal. The game's about to kick off. They're like, right, you can go to your rooms, watch the opening ceremony and the game. So we look out the streets, as they're singing the national anthem. This is a busy city. There's not one person on the street, not one car driving on the roads. Mm. We were on a high rise. We could see everything. We're like, it's going to ghost town out there. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And then the game started, then Brazil scored, and you just see fireworks. You open your door, and people are running around the streets with flags and fireworks. 2 minutes later, streets are dead. They score again, and it was just crazy. It was just...
Honestly.
I was like, this is...
yeah.
Like, this is football.
Yeah.
This is religion to them. This is the biggest thing in this country. And that's when you're like, this is a World... That's when it hit me. I was like, I'm at a World Cup.
Yeah.
And the amount of emotions went through my body then when that happened. I was like, whoa. That's when it hit me.
Yeah, I mean, for you, Andy, just being amazing, yeah.
It's like trying to describe the birth of your first child. You can't. You've got to experience it.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. And unless you've been there, you can't explain to anyone what it's like. It was just amazing. But saying that, to have it shut down, out front of our hotel, we had a McDonald's, 24 hours, they shut. They shut, the doors locked, everything, and every shop was shut in the city we were in. Everything. Not a car, nothing.
Wow.
But when they score, though, as you said, you hear it goes insane in the streets. So it's mind-numbing. It's like every single person in Brazil follows football. Is that what it felt like?
I mean, it is their religion, isn't it?
Mm.
I would have hated to see streets then when they lost 7 to Germany then in semi-final. I bet that weren't very good.
We were back in Oz by then.
Yeah. So a fantastic experience, and obviously one you want to emulate again. You've gone on and played more international appearances since then, haven't you?
Yeah, well, obviously didn't manage to get any minutes in the World Cup. Yeah. So as devastated as I was not to have played, I still took a lot from the experience, and still had to wait a few months, actually. It was before I made my
September
debut.
September,
and then after that, I waited quite a while before my next call.
You scored on debut, that's right.
Scored on debut, which wasn't too bad at Craven Cottage.
I remember seeing that on social, and I was shocked. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So barely scored? Never.
And it wasn't an own goal.
Yeah.
So something wasn't right.
Yeah.
But no, it was, debut couldn't have gone any better, really. But for me to start sort of playing regular games, it took me a good few months. Mm. I had an injury that kept me out for a while, and
missed out an Asian Cup.
And then sort of towards the end of the season with Preston, I started back playing regularly, got my call up again to the national team, and from September last year onwards, I think I played near every game. So it's every time you get called up, you still can't describe the feeling when you get to walk out and sing the national anthem. It's things you dream of as a kid, and I don't think anyone will.
No, it's a unique thing, isn't it? Yes. Unless you've actually done it, nobody can ever describe what it's like, really, and feel that.
Yeah. Who gets a chance to do it, who sings that national anthem, gets the same feeling from the first time for every other time that they get to do it. I hope I get to experience many more.
So you came back from the World Cup and then got back into quite a interesting season, shall we say?
Yeah. We've had a few ups and downs that year. A few injuries that kept me out for a while, and then we went on a great run at the end of the season to let that great run
Yeah.
slip away last game of the season. So
I mean, I was there at Colchester. I mean, it was just unbelievable. That you know, they were going to go down if you'd beat them. You were going to get automatic promotion. Everybody's full. Big celebration day. And it was just a damn squib, weren't it, on the day? It was just unbelievable.
It was.
I did the commentary, so...
It wasn't a good game. No, I think nerves, and I think maybe we maybe felt we could turn up there and win. Mm. But I think they're the most dangerous games to play when they're all fighting for their lives, and we should have been doing the same. But I think everything happens for a reason. So,
well, I mean, the reason I've skipped up really over the season is because your season became three matches.
Yeah.
Mm. Losing there, and I must admit, I came back with some fans that day. A great guy, Darren, because I ain't got a lift home. And they got me back home, Preston fans, and we had a good laugh coming up. I hopefully raised the spirits, but I couldn't see you winning. I thought Chesterfield would beat you, because I thought there is no way you will come back from this. So how did you, as a team, as a group, as managers, coaches, players, get yourselves right to play? How well you did in those matches against Chesterfield?
Well, the season before, towards the end of the season, we'd lost to Crewe in the last game of the season, and they had to beat us to stay in the league. So we had a pitch invasion from Crewe, and I remember the feeling. The game, we were still going to be in the playoffs whether we won or lost. Could have been better for us if we'd won, better position in the playoffs. We lost, pitch invasion. I remember the feeling. It was horrible. Rotherham, pitch invasion. I remember like the looks on their faces, horrible. We also experienced a few weeks earlier, Brentford, they got promoted early, pitch invasion. And I remember seeing the looks on the players' faces, fans' faces, how much it meant. And then when it happened at Colchester, we said as a group and as a staff, we said, like, let's not ever, ever be on the end of one of them again, because look at how much that means and what emotions football can do to you. If we want to feel what they're feeling, we need to turn this around quick. We deserve to be where we are. We felt we deserved to have done enough to have got automatic. So let's go change it. And I just remember that week of training, boys were, the place was lifted. And you could just see that we were ready to do whatever it took to win. And obviously there was maybe a little few nerves at the start of the Chesterfield game, but then once you soon realise it's just a game of football and you look to your left, you look to your right, you look at the players around you, we knew we had a good enough squad to do it. And then Swindon was just...
We'll come on to Swindon. But I can imagine at home, all the way, thousands of miles in Australia, and you're listening to that Colchester match. Mm. I mean, oh my gosh. I bet there were shrimps on the barbie. I bet there were beers cooling. I bet you're in your pool and thinking it's going to be the best promotion party ever.
It was 2 a.m. in the morning, James. So,
all right. It's still warm, though.
Still 30 degrees.
Yeah, no, it was pretty flat, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was devastating.
I must admit, like I say, it was just unbelievable. And like not, but then to recover like you did and then go to Wembley, but still be underdogs, because everybody said Swindon at Wembley, the way they play, I'll play Preston off the park.
What a day.
What a day. Did you come over for that?
Oh, yeah.
Were you?
Flew over Friday and went home Tuesday.
Right.
I had 4 nights in the UK. Didn't even get jet lag, was that quick. It was amazing. It was to be in the Bobby Moore suite.
Had you been to Wembley before?
No. Being in the Bobby Moore suite with all the families, before the game was good, after the game was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because I got to meet all the wives and the kids and everyone, and then the gaffer's missus looked after us on the bus coming home and bought us all a few drinks, the gaffer did, and it was really good. We had a nice trip back, and we followed the lads all the way back, and our coach, they did not sit down. We could see them just dancing all the way back to Preston. For 3 hours, it was amazing. I'd lost my voice, and it was surreal.
Was that your first time at Wembley, Bales?
I'd been there before, but only as a spectator.
Right.
I've been to watch an England game, when England qualified for the World Cup, actually.
Yeah.
I was there for that game, but you can't describe the experience until you've actually sort of played it, I think.
Andy, you've got one. Can you give us one of your favourite tunes?
Our Suspicious Minds by the Fine Young Cannibals.
Right, and why is that then?
Well, we only got married 4 years ago. It took me 21 years to decide, so his engagement might be pretty long. And it was our wedding song.
21 years?
Actually, 25 years, I'm lying. It took me 25 years.
Well, you better get that right.
It took you 25 years?
Yeah. I got engaged and married in 20 minutes.
Now for some more chat with Bailey and Andy Wright.
That was my first time at the new Wembley, and it was brilliant. We got there early. with Andy Bays, Dan Jewell and Phil, and we were down pitch side, and it was brilliant. Mm. Nobody in the stadium and just having a look round, and, you know, yeah. I mean, they went to have a look at the changing rooms and all that. That don't bother me. No. It's the grass and yeah. seeing the stadium. And it was just like, wow, I would have given anything to take 20-odd years off my life to go and play on that. But and the rest, like you say, is history. How they played that day was just... Yeah. Especially with all the history of Preston failing in the playoffs. Yeah. So everything was against Preston to win. And they just turned everything upside down, didn't they, on the day?
I think as soon as that whistle went, you could just see everyone had an extra spring in their step. Lads were... just could give extra. Everyone had that bit of quality. And when you got players like we do up front, like obviously Bex, who was on flames that day and showed the quality striker he is. And I think obviously with all of us behind him, giving the platform to go and do what he does best, it definitely helped. And when you're 3-0 up at half time, it's a nice cushion.
Yeah.
But even though at 3-0 at half time, we'd known towards the end of the season we'd thrown a few wins away at 3-0, so we were determined to make sure that we could add more to it. And we definitely did that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I remember there was must have been about a minute to go, and some lads were like that, and I just remember thinking, nah, it's not over yet, it's not over, can't do it, like I can't do it until the whistle goes. And then you look at the bench and all the lads are there, arms around, ready to run on. You see big Stucky in the front of the back. You're like, oh no. Then the whistle went and it was just, the place just erupted. The game was just a blur to me. It happened that quick. Yeah. And
it's one of them things, isn't it, when you've been involved in that in football. Like I said, I've never won at Wembley, but I have won, believe it or not, some important games in my time. You don't want to come off the pitch, do you? Yeah. You've got all your fans there, you've got all your teammates there, and you just don't want it to end. You just do not want it to go in. As much as you have DVDs and pictures and all like that, that instant of it all happening is just the best feeling ever, isn't it? The best feeling in the world.
It's all right, just every second you had, you're hugging someone or you're chatting, jumping around and spraying champagne and causing chaos. And like you say, you want it to last forever, and it's only a short feeling, and I mean, you get the memories back, but that feeling is, can't replace it.
Well, no, and like you say, that all that time, knocking on our door, your dad bringing you over, did you ever think you'd win a game at Wembley in a playoff final? And
I never thought I'd go on to have done what I've done so far. Not that I wasn't confident, I just... You don't look that far into it, you just sort of take each...
Yeah, but that's why the player you are, you see. Because you don't take anything for granted, and you love every bit of it and want more of it. Once you start taking it for granted as a footballer, that's it. You finish up on your backside.
No, I agree.
And that's a massive thing in today's game, and that's for everybody who plays it needs to enjoy every single minute they get, training, playing, everything, and never ever think, oh, this is dead easy, or anybody who doesn't enjoy it, packing for me. It's great having the money, but packing, because it's the best game in the world.
Love of it. Yeah. There's something that it gives you that nothing else can give you. It's like an addiction of that the competitiveness and winning. I think it's an addiction. If you don't get it, it frustrates you. So something that I know I always have to have. And if you do that, there's going to lead one way, I think.
Thanks for everything you did for me as a player. And I thank you, Andy, for bringing him over and making my day that day, because like I say, I made the decision and I'm absolutely chuffed that you've done onto what you've done. So thank you very much.
Appreciate what you
do. Thank you very much for the chat. Cheers.
I'm going to thank you.
Use that story everywhere, man.
Ah, no, that's brilliant. Thank you.